Good afternoon. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair once again on from the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon. Broadcasting to you live, as I almost always do, unscripted and unrehearsed on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and stream live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. Last week, I was in an aluminium, as the Brits say, an aluminium tube flying over Greenland in the tender Irish arms of Aer Lingus, returning from a wonderful trip to Cambridge and to get to Cambridge through London. And I will be talking about that trip and the things that happened during it in a little later part of the broadcast. I tried to carve out some time to do a pre-recorded broadcast and was not able to do that either. So I sent a signal to Captain O'Brien, to Truman, and asked him if he would play the broadcast that I did the day after Mary R. died, and to put a little introduction on it. And he did both of those things. And Captain, I am indebted to you for that. I really do appreciate it, and for the gracious introduction that you put on. The reason that I chose that broadcast was two reasons. The first one was that part of the life that Mary R. and I had together was lived in Cambridge. And I was just returning from a visit to Cambridge on a very special mission. And the second reason was that when I did that broadcast 2.5 years ago, I became very quickly aware that there were a number of other people who were in the same situation, that they had lost people that were very close to them unexpectedly, very suddenly and unexpectedly. And they didn't feel that they had the right words to express what they felt about all of that. I don't know whether or not my words were the right ones. They certainly could have been better ones. We can always do better and things like that. But what I do know is that a number of people came back to me and told me how much they appreciated that particular broadcast. In looking back on it and playing it again after I returned just a few days ago, I played it back again. And looking back on that, there are some things that I would have said differently. There are some things that I should have said that I didn't, and maybe one or two things that I said that could have been replaced by something else. But in the aggregate, it was what I was feeling at the time. And at that time, I had the same purpose, and that was to be of some help to those who maybe felt that they had needed some way to, in their own hearts, talk about and let out the feelings that happened in their particular situation. So that's why I chose that broadcast. And it is, I hope, the only time that I have to break my commission with you, which is to broadcast wherever I am in the world, live, unrehearsed, and unscripted. Next week, I will be in Vermont. I'm going to go for Thanksgiving with my sister and my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law, Jack, who is on the binnacle list, he is slowly moving into the depths and the darkness of Alzheimer's. Last year, we were able to communicate almost without any impediment. I've just talked to him in the last few days, and I can tell that there's some marked changes and some differences, and I feel it really important that I go again this year and be with that family for the Thanksgiving celebration. For indeed, as I have said many times and will say many times again, I'm the most fortunate of men, and for which I have just an incredible number of things for which to be thankful. The binnacle list this week carries with it a couple of pieces of sad news. Not any crossings of the bar, but two people here on the island with whom I am particularly close are having serious difficulties and challenges. I often wonder what people who have no religious conviction or religious faith think when people say, "I'm sending up prayers on your behalf." And then I came to realize that people, whether they believe that prayers have any efficacy or whether they believe that there's anybody listening to those prayers, but they do listen. What they do listen to is the fact that their friends, their shipmates, their classmates, their family members have thought enough to tell them that they are sending up their thoughts and, in their vocabulary, their prayers. And that has and can have a tremendous influence on how we pick ourselves up and roll it out. And I can tell you this, that when Mary R. died, and I received so many expressions of grief and consolation and friendship and love, so many of those came from all over the world. And I knew that I could not let any of them down. That's why I did that broadcast. That's one of the reasons why I did that broadcast. And it was, for me, part of the motivation to pick myself up and climb back up into the captain's chair, which is where all of you are entitled to expect to see me and to hear me. So for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list and who are suffering at this point, at this very moment in time, that's the same, that expression is for now. Enhanced membership on the binnacle list. And I'm putting myself on the binnacle list as well for just a minute. So for those of you, whether you think that prayers do any good, know that all of us are counting on you to follow the instructions of your medical practitioner and get on with the work that you have to do in order to get yourself off the binnacle list in the way which is approved by your Captain Joe for all of Captain Joe's people. I'm putting myself on the binnacle list. You remember we talked about an elision. An elision is a contact between a movable object, in this case your captain, and the gravel car park at in a park and ride here on the island. So I was coming back from the mainland, and I had a telephone call. My car, right, the one that I'm driving last night, is not configured so that I can talk on a telephone and still drive. So I pulled into this park and ride and finished my phone call, and then in the darkness, I felt one never passes up the opportunity to water the foliage. And so I was moving back into a darker part of the car park, and I tripped over a log, and I went face down into the gravel car park. I hastened to assure all hands that I, first of all, was able to pick myself up and brush myself off. The damage to the face is superficial above the face. Superficial, it doesn't look very seaman-like, but it's cleaning up all right. And the damage below the waist is a skin knee. It's sort of like when we all took a fall when we were kids. So I'm putting myself on the binnacle list, and I'm telling this story because we've talked a lot about falls, and we'll continue to talk about falls. And when you take a look at accidents and you trace back the causative factors for accidents, one could say, "Well, Captain, you shouldn't have gone into that park and ride." Well, what I really shouldn't have done was moved back into where it was dark and where I couldn't see where I was headed. So everybody, when we talk about falls for citizens of a certain age, that's remains as it has always been and since sailing ship days, one hand for yourself and one hand for the ship. So the trip to Cambridge, Scott Poer Research Institute, of which I am a member, and where I did my degree at the University of Cambridge, and where I remain to manage the construction of the Shackleton Memorial Library. We've talked about all of those events here on before. And the Institute celebrated its 100th birthday 2 years ago. But because of the virus, they delayed the celebration a year. Then they delayed it 2 years. And this year was the year that the director was finally able to put it on. I received an invitation, and I bought a number of seats at one of the tables at the venue. And I invited my neighbors, Dr. and Mrs. Phillips. Michelle, of course, is the owner of the chain of Kitty vending machines here on the island. And Dr. Phillips is, among many other accomplishments, is the medical director and the executive director of the Washington Poison Center, home of Mr. Yuck, and on whose board I sit. So I invited them, and the three of us went. And I believe that the motivator for the ever-lovely Michelle was that the guest of honor was to be His Serene Highness, the Albert II, the Prince of Monaco, whose father, of course, was Albert I, and whose mother was Grace Kelly. And for me, it was because I am a member of that institute, because there is a Wubold room in that institute, and because it is my intellectual home, and because I have many friends and colleagues there, and many memories of friends and colleagues who have now crossed the bar. So there was no way that I was not going to go, and Scott and Michelle and your captain, we all made our way to London and from London to Cambridge. Cambridge, for me, I'd been there a few weeks earlier, and I'd reported on that here. I'd been there a few weeks earlier with my son, Sean, and his wife, Barbie. And one of the things that we did then, and then one of the things that we did with Scott and Michelle, was to go to the home where Mary and I lived for 3 years. 21 Chaucer Road. It was there that we hosted our friends of family rank, Dr. Professor Mark Reinhardt in Stockholm. That's why I always recognize Stockholm as being one end of my world. And it was there that we had the first Thanksgiving dinner that Sir Vivian Fuchs and his wife, Lady Eleanor, had ever been to. Sir Vivian was the person who accomplished the transect of Antarctica that Sir Ernest Shackleton had intended to do, and instead, when Endurance sank, he accomplished quite a different mission. So Sir Vivian and his lovely lady came to the first Thanksgiving that we had in that particular house, and a number of other people from the Institute and from the university, because we had a group of friends who were not connected to the Institute, but who were otherwise influential in university life. So each time that we went at the entrance to Chaucer Road, first time with Sean and Barbie, the second time with Scott and Michelle, my heart just clenched right up, because I had made that down that street many, many times. The house is all the way at the end, the bitter end of the street, a dead end. And we drove into, we had a hire car both times. In the second time, connected with the hotel at which we stayed, was an ancient Bentley. An ancient Bentley. What a lovely ride that was. And so we drove down to 21 Chaucer Road and went into the car park, and the house looks exactly the same as it did when we lived there. The memories, of course, come flooding back. And all of those are such good, good memories. I just cannot imagine how one can have a picture book of memories that is more full of really good, good memories and wonderful, wonderful people and great events than your captains. And for that, and for all of you who have contributed to that picture book of memories, and there are hundreds of you out there, I remain ever grateful and ever thankful. I don't need Thanksgiving Day to come up once a year to remind me of all of those things. So one of the things we did was we went to that house. There were some people, there are some people living in it. I knocked on the door, told the people who answered the door, young people, teenagers, who I was, that I had lived in that house, and would it be all right with them if I took my family around to the back, to the back garden? And they agreed that it was certainly all right to do that. So I took them around to the back garden, which goes about, maybe an eighth of a mile. It's a huge, huge garden. It's all maintained by the university garden department. And on the other side of the hedge at the other end, there were people that kept chickens, including a rooster. So here we are in the middle of Iron Age, then Roman, then medieval Cambridge, now modern Cambridge, sort of modern, being awakened every morning by a rooster's crow. We didn't hear the rooster last week. I guess it was too late in the day for that. But all the rest of it was exactly the way it was that I remembered it. What a wonderful thing to go back to a place of such happiness and such accomplishment, and for it to look exactly as it was. But things don't change very much in the city like Cambridge, which is over 2,000 years old. Then we drove from there. We drove to the American Cemetery. Many people don't know that there is an American Cemetery in Cambridge. The land for it was bought by the university and donated to the United States government. It is a little piece of America in the middle of East Anglia, the ancient kingdom of East Anglia. And the American flag, the Stars and Stripes, fly in a very tall, tall flagpole. There are thousands of graves there, each one meticulously tended. It is an incredibly beautiful, beautiful place. And the bodies came from two major sources. One of those major sources were the bomber and fighter crews that were homeported in England. East Anglia had a number of those strips. The Duxford, which is just south of Cambridge, was one of those places that had I believe it was a bomber base, but I'm not sure whether it was bombers or fighters. In any case, the 8th Air Force was flying bombing, and there were a number of fighter units that protected those aircraft that were bombing Germany and the rest of Europe. Many of those aircraft came back with dead and dying crew members. Many of them were scooped up out of the English Channel. So all of the known graves, the names are listed on marble wall, a marble bulkhead that is part of the cemetery. All of this was significant in particular to Scott because his father was a P-47 pilot in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. And he wandered off while I was pontificating about the seaside, which is the second group of people that are interred there. Scott wandered off and was looking at all of the memories of units, of which his dad was one of those units. His dad survived the war. I got to know him and talk to him. But thousands did not, and they are interred in the American Cemetery in Cambridge. The second group are people, in particular from the D-Day landings. And there is a section there for Coast Guard people because Many of the landing craft, the coxswains for those landing craft were Coast Guard coxswains. Many of the transports that brought the troops to the beachhead were Coast Guard manned transports. And in particular for me, because of the part of my life which was spent in the search and rescue part of our life, the Coast Guard Rescue Flotilla 1, which was made up of 83-foot wooden patrol boats that were scooping up the survivors and the dead from landing craft that had been hit by shore batteries. And all of these people are in this wonderful cemetery. Wonderful in the sense that it is beautiful, it's beautifully maintained, and it is a place that I took everybody who came to stay with us at 21 Chaucer Road, went to that cemetery whether they felt that that was something they wanted to do or not. I had no trouble convincing Scott and Michelle that we should do it, and I was in particular touched by their reaction to the whole thing. We did a number of other things, but the high point, of course, was the dinner. I had intended to wear a dinner dress blue uniform, but it could not be ready by the time we left, so I looked absolutely splendid in a tuxedo, and Dr. Phillips was wearing a tuxedo, and the ever-lovely Michelle had had a beautiful dress made up, and so we all made our way to where at the end of the dinner. I had a couple of tickets, and I used those tickets to host a couple of students who were using the Wubold room in the Shackleton Memorial Library. You can see how we're all of us connected. So that's just part of all the things that happened. It was a glorious time. My heart was swelling. And we're going back in probably in May. I'm going to lecture at the Institute and maybe teach a seminar or two. But there are so many people that we did not get to see, and some of them are maybe just a little bit fragile. But it was just a wonderful, wonderful time. And I want all of you who are Coast Guard people to know that the Semper Paratus is well-known and highly respected and regarded in the University of Cambridge and in the Scott Polar Research Institute and in the Shackleton Memorial Library. A couple of announcements. First of all, I have to say that Sailor got his annual checkup today at Fair Isle Animal Clinic, and I am here proclaiming that today is Fair Isle Animal Clinic Day. They do just a wonderful job there, and Dr. Don Walsko is taking care of all of my animals, which is a lot of them by now, taking care of all of my animals for over 20 years. And Sailor is good for another year. He remains with me on station and watching properly. We're celebrating the 247th birthday of the Marine Corps. Semper Fi, Semper Fidelis, always faithful to all of Captain Joe's people who are Marines. We all know, all of us military people know, that once you are a Marine, always a Marine. Once you are a Guardian, once you are one of us, you always have a piece of that way down inside you, even if you pretend like you don't want it known. And I've known a few like that. You know, you don't get that from your Captain Joe, for sure. Sunday, the 4th of December, for the first time in 3 years, we're having the open house again out at Point Robinson Light Station. The Lighthouse Santa will make his appearance at about 13:30, and is as traditional, because I'm the senior man out at Point Robinson Light, the Lighthouse Santa will come and make his number with me, and he'll ask permission to carry out his duties, which I always give. And he always asks me how I have been behaving during the year, and my report always is that I falter and flutter and do not always live up to the high standards that I set for myself and for all of Captain Joe's people. And so once again, he may want to pass me by, but please carry on with all, especially the children. So my day ends today with an event which is acquiring more and more significance to me. I have accepted a position on the board of directors for the Washington Poison Center, which is the home and the sponsor of Mr. Yuck. All of you should have Mr. Yuck stickers. I can arrange for them to be shipped to you in 55-gallon drum lots, should you need some. I accepted this invitation from Dr. Phillips, who is both the medical director and the executive director, because one of the most important parts of Mr. Yuck's work is reaching out to children. And Dr. Phillips and I have already done one public event where we did just that. Dr. Phillips is a very aggressive distributor of Mr. Yuck stickers, and we have done some really good work. On a serious note, this is really important business, and not just for children, but especially maybe for citizens of a certain age who, if they have access to their own medication, could well be using the wrong thing at the wrong time. So I believe it to be important work. Otherwise, I would not have accepted the invitation. And I'm finding it to be particularly challenging and to be of particular interest. Wonderful, wonderful people led by a true humanitarian. And that is my friend and colleague, Dr. Scott Phillips. So new Coast Guard icebreaker is still, so far as I know, no steel has been cut on her. Supposed to have started some time ago. The shipyard that had the contract to build her has now been absorbed by another shipyard called Bollinger. The irony of this is that Bollinger was one of the original competitors for the icebreaker contract and lost it. And now Bollinger has bought the yard, which has got or supposed to be building the first of the new heavy-duty icebreakers. You can bet that there will be more and more on this as we carry on. So I am coming up on that 1,300 time, two bells of the afternoon watch. It remains then for me to tell you that next week I will be broadcasting from Vermont for the Thanksgiving holiday. And that for all of you who are responsible for other people, all of you who have people who report to you, remember that the operating the philosophy of your captain over all of the years that I was in command was that we have two principles. One of them is to carry out the mission, and the other one is to take care of the people that are given to you to carry out that mission. They are mutually exclusive. They must both happen at the same time, and it is to the skill of the leader to make all of those things happen. So this is, as always, your Captain Joe from the captain's chair. I remain, as always, on station and watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.